We were now in the midst of the student protesters on a street lined with tall buildings. A chopper that had been circling above started to descend and move toward the crowd. Mohammed and I knew what was going to happen. We ran for the nearest gutter and dove in. The chopper swept down to street level. As soon as it was about 25 meters from the protesters, it spun around and faced them sideways. A soldier sitting in the open side opened fire with a machine gun, mowing down the crowd. People ran for their lives. The street that a minute before had been filled with banners and noise was now a silent graveyard full of restless souls fighting to reconcile their sudden deaths. Mohammed and I ran down through alleyways. We came to a fence that faced a main street on which there was a roadblock. Armed men patrolled the area. We lay in the gutter for 6 hours, waiting for nightfall. Chances to escape death were better at night, because the red track of the bullets could be seen in the dark. There were others with us. One, a student in a blue t-shirt, had a sweaty face, and every few seconds he wiped his forehead with his shirt. A young woman, probably in her 20s, sat with her head between her knees, trembling and rocking. Against the wall of the gutter, a bearded man whose shirt was stained with someone else's blood sat holding his head in his hands. I felt bad about what was happening, but was not as scared as these people who had not experienced war before. It was their first time, and it was painful to watch them. I hoped that Uncle would not worry too much about our whereabouts. More gunshots and a cloud of tear gas floated by. We held our noses until the wind took the gas away. Nightfall seemed so far away. It felt like waiting for Judgment Day. But as it must, night finally came, and we made it home, crouching behind houses and jumping fences. My uncle was sitting on the veranda, tears in his eyes. When I greeted him, he jumped up as if he had seen a ghost. He embraced us for a long time and told us not to go to the city anymore, but we had no choice. We would have to, in order to get food. The gunshots didn't cease for the next 5 months. They became the new sound of the city. In the morning, families sat on their verandas and held their children close, staring at the city streets, where gunmen roamed in groups, looting, raping, and killing people at will. Mothers wrapped their trembling arms around their children each time the gunshots intensified. People mostly ate soaked raw rice with sugar or plain gari with salt and listened to the radio, hoping to hear some good news. Sometimes during the day, there were several plumes of smoke rising from houses that had been set on fire by gunmen. We could hear them excitedly laughing at the sight of the burning houses. One evening, a neighbor who lived a few doors down from my uncle's house was listening to a pirate radio station that accused the new government of committing crimes against civilians. A few minutes later, a truck full of soldiers stopped in front of the man's house. They dragged him, his wife, and his two older sons outside, shot them, and kicked their bodies into the nearby gutter. My uncle vomited after we had seen the act. For the first 3 weeks, people were so afraid that they didn't dare to leave their houses. But soon enough, everyone got used to the gunshots and the madness. People began going about their daily business of searching for food, even though stray bullets were likely to kill them. Children played guessing games, telling each other whether the gunfire was an AK-47, a G3, an RPG, or a machine gun. I mostly sat outside on the flat rock with Mohammed, and we were both quiet. I was thinking about the fact that we had run so far away from the war, only to be caught back in it. There was nowhere to go from here. I had lost contact with Laura in New York for more than 5 months. Before that, she and I had constantly written letters to each other. She would tell me what she was doing and ask that I take good care of myself. Her letters came from all over the world where she has storytelling projects. Recently, I had tried calling her collect every day, but was unsuccessful. The phones at Saratel, the national telephone company, weren't going through anymore. Each day, I sat on the veranda with my uncle and cousins looking toward the city. We had stopped listening to the storytelling cassette as curfew started before dark. My uncle laughed less and less, and sighed more and more. We continued to hope that things would change, but they kept getting worse.